Before we get any further into the interview, I want to give a shout out to our partnering nonprofit festival for the series, Festability. As a board member, I helped put together a wonderful event in St. Louis at the Missouri History Museum. We had so many activities and vendors set up all over with an amazing headliner for our main stage. Getting to do this event was a dream come true. It is the best event in St. Louis to celebrate your disability unapologetically. Make sure you come out later this year. More information will be available soon. Thank you, Festability, for sponsoring the series. Now, back to the show.
People think that disability is worse than death.
I think it depends on who you're talking to. So I think that a lot of people who are not disabled and have no disability in their life and have not encountered anyone with a disability making their life work out, they're afraid. A lot of it too is, I mean, we talked earlier about trauma, about disability being only described as traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
That is generally the descriptor when it comes to trying to like understand the disability experience. As well, there's a lot of infantilization. So when you have trauma and infantilization and all of these things, you know, put into one box, if somebody came to me and said, from now on, your life is going to be trauma and infantilization, I'd be like, y'all might as well kill me. I want to be with God. Like, the truth of the matter is that at the end of the day, life is just life. And when you, if you become disabled or if you were born disabled, you navigate life, the world, and space in the way you're going to navigate life and the world. Mm. And it's up to you how you want to do that. Like, I at any point can choose to be like, you know what? I give up. It's too hard. I don't want to do this. I mean, I have very limited vision, but I have some vision, and I am on my way to total blindness. And when I was told this, I think it was 2017 or 2018 or something. It was pre-COVID. I got a diagnosis that was like, so by the way, you have a couple years left of sight and you're going to go totally blind. So at that point, I could have been like, you know what? I'm done. It's over. But in actuality, my first thought was, how do I capitalize off this? Like, how do I turn this into life? And that was when we started doing our bucket list. And we ended up doing stuff like, you know, skydiving and all of that kind of stuff, just to be like, you know what? Life is awesome. Life is a fun thing, no matter what lens you're looking through. Life is a celebration. It's a party you got invited to. Life is a buffet. Don't sit on the sidelines. Come and enjoy the buffet. It doesn't matter what you came dressed up in. You got invited. So have fun at the party because you got invited to it.
Mm. Right. Well, yes. And add desexualization to the list of presumptions.
You know what? This is my favorite line. If you don't think disabled people have sex, I must not be disabled. Because your girl gets it in. Look, disabled people have sex. Are you kidding me? Like, you know what I was telling somebody? Look, it turns out that a majority of disability is non-visible. So most folks with disabilities are non-visible, and a majority of the folks with non-visible disabilities don't disclose or don't even recognize what they have as a disability. So guess what? Your mama and your daddy may have had disabilities, and you born, right? This is just math. Like, this is just math. You gonna tell me we have all these billions of people and that not a single disabled person had one of these kids? Like,
Yeah. And speaking of Christianity and God, why do people not want to accept that some of us will want to keep our disability in heaven?
Right? Hey, you know what? First of all, have you seen your girl wearing her cute little dress and her cute little canes. You gonna tell me they're gonna take that from me in heaven? I'm gonna be walking around with a cute little Jesus piece. I'm gonna have my y'all gonna see me. I'm gonna be right at St. Peter's Gate letting y'all in, being like, I'm cute, right? Red carpet photos right at St. Peter's Gate. Okay. I think that, you know, folks don't recognize that there's pride in the disability identity. And I think one of the reasons that folks don't recognize it is because, like, look, there's a lot that folks with disabilities have to offer, like executive leadership. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of executive leaders that are like, I don't know how to be a leader. Everybody hates me because I'm the leader. Well, why don't you learn how to think outside the box?
Problem solve.
How to lead with intention and accept everybody. Make sure that everybody is risen up and liberated, not just you and your ideas. Why don't you think critically? Why don't you think creatively? Why don't you have outside input come in and lift everybody up intersectionally? Why don't you see everyone as an asset? These are things that, like, disabled people are just born with that executive leaders have to go to training to get. Mm-hmm. And that's why they think we don't want to have our disabilities in heaven, because they don't know that we're proud of it, that we take pride in being on the outside. Like, when we think of Darwin and we think of, like, you know, just how, I don't know, just like evolution. Evolution is spearheaded by those on the margins. Mm. Like, evolution is spearheaded by, like, the animals that escape predation, right? Mm. Evolution was spear. You know what? When we talk about dinosaurs and how they all got extinction level event. Okay, I'm going like a little kooky here, but like extinction level event, right? And we had the only things that survived were the little rodents and critters and stuff. They were the ones that survived and eventually became like what we are. And it's kind of like they were the little nothings. They were the little no ones. They weren't the ones running everything. And now they're the ones that brought on this whole new dawn. And like, I don't know. I feel like people don't really recognize that it is us on the margins, us who think outside the box. We're the ones that come up with the new stuff. The Einsteins, the Teslas, the folks who are the Harriet Tubmans, the folks who have to think outside the box to make change. That's us.
The Lachies.
The Lachies. Okay, brownie points. You get brownie. Oh, I love that. Okay, I'm walking away with that one. I'm going to keep that one in my pocket. That's funny. I love that.
All right. Yeah, we're even unaware that we had a disabled president for the most part.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
FDR.
So that's very true. And speaking of disability and politics, one of the really beautiful things that just recently happened, actually, I don't know when this is airing, so I don't want to say just recently, but one of the beautiful things that happened was the Fetterman situation. A lot of folks thought, oh, he's not going to be able to do it. He's going to look bad, this, that, and the other thing. But really what happened was a beautiful thing. We were showcased accessibility. We were showcased the usage of it. We also had this swelling of support for it, of folks going like, you know what? He went out there and he was himself. He used the tools he needed, and captioning was used and utilized. And then at the end of the day, he got voted in because he was able to express himself and use his words using accessibility technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, all right, we got off on this dope-ass tangent, but tell me about what you're doing on the Grammy board. What is your position on the board? Do you get to vote on the official award nominations?
Yeah, so all if you get into the Grammys, you're either a voting member or a professional member, and all voting members are creators, so they'll be like musicians or producers, and they get to vote in the ceremony. There are over 3,000 members, at least in New York, I believe. So just think of that. And there's 12 chapters. So we have a very large voting body. For me, what I am is I'm a Grammy board governor. And so that means I sit on the board in the New York chapter. I'm also the DEI ambassador or DEI liaison. And so what I do is at every chapter, the 12 chapters around the US have one DEI ambassador, and we meet quarterly to talk about DEI initiatives, ways we can amplify DEI, or just some of the issues that we're having in our specific chapter that could use like a national lens. We meet with the VP of DEI, who's Ryan Butler, and we have those discussions. One of my unique positions that I have as LACHI is that I do bring that disability contingent to the national level. So I'm not just kind of boxed into just New York when it comes to disability. Folks turn to me about the disability discussion nationally. Other chapters come to me. And then also the leadership comes to me. And we are, again, this year going to help make the 65th Grammys accessible. Last year, we were able to have a visible ramp to the stage. We had ASL on the red carpet. We had captioning and audio description for home viewers. And we want to take it a step further this year. I'm hooking up with this amazing woman named Andrea Levant out at LCI. And we're working together to do the dang thing again this year. And I mean, I'm really honored and privileged to have the position. I mean, it don't get much higher up than the Grammys when you talk about music. And it's like, I'm not hiding who I am. I didn't have to like do anything weird, you know, to get to where I am. And all I did was be myself and made it this far. And now I get to, and I'm the type where if I get in a room, everybody's in the room. I'm a everybody coming with me kind of person. And so I've been getting more disabled musicians into the Recording Academy at every chapter level. I've been having discussions where, in fact, we're having for Disability Day, Independent Days of Persons with Disabilities, December 3rd, a bunch of us at the Grammys headquarters just to hang out and celebrate and bring disability to the Grammys because it hasn't been there. Nobody talks about it. Everybody's afraid to talk about it. they have the inclusion rider and they have DEI initiatives that don't really have disability like baked in. And so I get to be here to start getting them to bake it in. And they can't say they don't know nobody because I'm right here. And yes, there are other disabled folks that have come before me, but they just haven't been advocates. And so that's where the shift lies. And so again, I'm real honored to do this, but I don't just focus on disability. As a DEI liaison, I focus on Blackness. I'm part of the BMC, which is the Black Music Collective, focus on women in the mix, which is women stuff. but also I want to make sure that, you know, as a queer aligned person, I bring queer focused things to the forefront. I also want to make sure that we talk about like Indigenous persons and peoples. Not enough people are talking about that in the music industry. I want to make sure that we're talking about different genres that people don't ever think about. And just last year, we really got to highlight Black people in country music. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it is an honor, a pleasure, and a privilege.
So how did you get that opportunity? And secondly, why haven't you been nominated yet?
How you gonna come for me like that? For me. So how did I get in? So basically, actually it's funny because my manager who has now passed away, actually, he actually had got me in. He hooked me up with a few people who he knew there. I started talking to them. And the second I got into one of the rooms, they were actually what ended up happening was, I got invited to be a part of this thing called District Advocate Day. And we talked to like our different like Congress people and asked them to like pass bills about music or whatever. And they invited me and it was just going to be a room of like 15 people. But I was like, oh my God, I got invited into this room. Let me know all the bills. So I read all the bills and I like read all the fine print. And then I read about this rep that we're going to meet who was Caroline Maloney. And we get in there. And like all the other musicians are kind of talking like, yeah, we're musicians, like vote for, like be a part, pass our bill, yay. And then it comes to me and I was like, so in section 3, and that was like the LACHI show for like 20 minutes, like me and the rep just going back and forth. At the end of it, they were like, you should be in DC. But that conversation got so many eyeballs from the Grammys on me that it was like a no-brainer. I ended up becoming part of the advocacy committee. Then I became the co-chair of the advocacy committee. Through becoming the co-chair, I ran a few national programs where I introduced disability, got to become close friends with the president at that time, who was Valaisha Butterfield Jones. And then now here I am, the DEI ambassador.
Hmm. disabled people don't bullshit in these meetings. They should know better.
Yeah, no, I know, right? I know, right? No, we're not going to let stuff slide. Are you kidding me? We know how to advocate. Like, wrong crowd. If you thought I was just going to sit back.
Mm-hmm.
But I do kind of owe it to that initial meeting. And I've consistently brought that fire this whole time. And look, sometimes it's going to, you know, rub one or two people the wrong way. But, you know, I try to focus on the love that I get for the work I'm doing.
Tell us about more about the organization Ramped.
Oh, yes. So Ramped, Recording Artists and Music Professionals with Disabilities. So I founded this back in 2021, and we officially launched at the top of January 2022. And really what we are is we're a global network of established and competitive recording artists and music professionals with disabilities. And by recording artists and music professionals, I mean anywhere from vocalists, songwriters, composers, engineers, producers. And by music professionals, I mean anyone from, you know, administrators to agents to managers to sound techs to creative support staff. And by disability, we mean the entire spectrum, all types of disabilities, whether it be a physical disability, a mental disability, whether it be deafness, whether it be chronic illness, whether it be rare disease, whether it be immunodeficiency. And a lot of folks, when they say 1 in 4, that's pre-COVID numbers. I just want to let people know that. It might be 1 in 3 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And we're established music professionals. And so what we do is we advocate for accessibility, when we amplify disability culture and inclusion, we promote competitive, equitable inclusion at all levels and all facets of the music and performance industry. We do that through programming, we do that through getting together and doing panels, and we also do that through artist development, making sure that the artists that are part of our community have the tools they need to continue to succeed. Because really, ultimately, what we want to do is have folks who identify as disabled be on the same sort of tier as their non-disabled counterparts. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have people out here doing like some amazing work and have been on some like big national tours, and they're doing good stuff and they're making money. But for some reason, they can't break out and have their name known just because of just the general societal stigmas of being afraid to amplify disability in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're here to start creating that new brand of diverse celebrity. I'm really proud of the work we're doing. We're very shoestring right now because we're very new, but we do have a lot of interest. I mean, we were the ones that got together and made the Grammys accessible for 64th Grammys, and that's what we're doing for 65th. We just recently held a panel to help disabled composers with Netflix, and we plan to replicate those kind of panels. We've gotten coverage in everywhere from Billboard to New York Times to Forbes to Variety. People being interested in what we're doing because we are bringing something that shouldn't be new
mm-hmm.
to the forefront, and we're bringing it at a competitive level. So we're not saying like, hey, help us. And there's this one of my favorite folks who's a member of Rant, his name is Namel Norris. He's part of Four Wheel City. One of the things he says that I love is, we're not looking for a handout. We're looking for a hand up.
Mm.
We're looking for you to look at us and go, wow, that person is competitive. Let me make space for that person as well.
Mm-hmm. How do you define disability culture, and why is it a central part of Rant's mission?
Oh, how do I define disability culture? That's definitely one of my favorite questions. So disability culture is really the celebration of disability. And disability, by disability, we mean every facet of disability, the vast diversity of disability. Disability culture encompasses our thoughts, our words, our music, our worldviews, our perspectives, our poetry, our art that we create. Disability culture is creative, it's adaptable, it's innovative, and it's rooted in problem solving. It is basically rooted in part in the oppression that we face, in the societal pressures that we face, and it comes through in the different minds and the different bodies that we come in. It's that new narrative that we bring, and it is that strength, pride, and dignity that we get to showcase, and it deserves to be celebrated. It is us holding a mirror up to society and going, don't fear what you see, celebrate what you see. Mm-hmm. That is disability culture. And basically, it is taking the deepest part of ourself that society says to hide and standing in front of it and celebrating it. And prime examples are me walking around with rhinestone glam canes in the middle of New York City and saying, mm-hmm. what? Mm-hmm. That is a celebration of disability culture. And one of the other ways that I know that I'm starting to celebrate disability culture is through my new single, Black Girl Cornrows, basically celebrating disability, but basically celebrating the self-description, mm-hmm. Black Girl Cornrows. And really in that song, even though it's a dance song where everybody's just kind of moving and shaking their butt and they barely know what's going on, I'm celebrating disability culture in a way that it can infiltrate pop culture. And mm-hmm. that's what we at Ramped are really trying to do. We're trying to amplify this notion of disability culture and the narrative that celebrating it brings and using it to infiltrate pop culture so that we can be doing our part in putting disability on the map.
So let's talk about pop culture. This past summer, the disabled community had to discuss ableist lyrics that were used by Beyoncé and Lizzo. What were your true initial thoughts about it? There were conversations around the time of Festability.
Yeah. So if I'm going to be completely honest, by the time I was even, the whole thing was really fast, right? It was like a mm-hmm. cavalcade. And by the time I got into it, which was still literally day one, it was already backlashing. Like they had already changed the lyrics and quote unquote experts and leaders in the disability community were coming at them for it, right? So by the time I got into it, they were already being came at after having changed the lyric, okay? So I have already gotten and continue to get like flack for being racist. Like people are like, Lachi, you're racist. You don't like white people. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, but here's where the problem is. The problem is that what I saw was a bunch of white people yelling at black women.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I saw. And I felt very much like a black woman right then. I didn't feel like a disabled black woman. I didn't feel like a disabled woman. I didn't feel like a disabled black person. I felt like a black woman. And I felt like I was being yelled at.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of inspirations from growing up and coming up, like Alicia Keys and this and that. But one of my sort of like current inspirations is Lizzo. Because she's kind of doing what I am doing as well. But she was able to break it out and make it work, right? And I'm like trying to be like a couple steps behind, like, girl, let me do it too. And to see that kind of backlash and to see how quickly they turned around and, there's a whole vibe of, well, wait, hold up, I'm oppressed too, so I get it. So let me just change this real quick. Says a lot. It says a lot more than the fact that they used the word. The fact that they were quick, the fact that they took such a quick action mm-hmm. says more about their character than the fact that they said the word, right? So this is why people need to be given grace for ignorance. Okay. There are some folks who have intentional ignorance or like, they're purposeful ignorance, but there is a nuance. Like you can understand when someone truly just didn't know. And to give them that grace, it's like they changed it in 5 seconds, guys. If they doubled down or this turned into a whole discussion, then yeah, that's one thing. So I just felt like, a black woman right then. And that's probably, that says all that I think I need to say about mm-hmm. that situation.
mm-hmm. Do you think that artists should be even more censored for disabled slurs, just as white people should refrain from using racial slurs?
I have two answers. One, I don't love race and disability being compared in that kind of way, right? I like when people go, you know, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't, you know, be do disability, have a non-disabled person play a disabled person, just like you shouldn't have a white person play a black person. It's like, those are two different non-compared experiences, and they have their own very valid spaces and should be spoken about in their space. I do believe that, you know, folks should be given the grace for ignorance. But I also believe that when a community tells you what they want, you should listen. When a whole community says, hey, you should listen to that community, because they're telling you what you want. And so if you continue to do it, you're doing it knowledgeably, and you no longer have like the ignorance card that you can play. Now I recognize that part of now, and then, okay. And then the second thing I want to say though, is this idea of censorship, especially as it pertains to the hip hop community. So there is just so much there right now, at least in the Recording Academy. We have this thing called the RAP Act, and it stands for, gosh darn it, I don't remember what it stands for right now, but it's basically what it says is that rap lyrics should not be used, restoring, I don't remember the, what is it? Say again?
Restoring Artistic Protection.
Okay, it's the Restoring Artistic Protection Act. There we go. And basically what it says is that we should not be using rap lyrics in court cases to define character, like to use in order to like character definition for the jury to base, or the judge to base their rulings off of. Or that at least we should have that very highly restrictive. And this law was even introduced because there are high profile cases where folks are just scouring through rap lyrics in order to toss folks in jail based on content of character, right? And the problem with this is that it is a stifling of art, and it is it's a disconnect between recognizing just vernacular and culture and folks rapping about their narrative and what they see and how life is, and trying to use art as an outlet to describe what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. We talked earlier about appropriation. I mean, the second someone appropriates that exact same lyric, it's no longer, there's no, oh no, what do you mean? So we should not be using, stifling art just because a couple of folks are clutching their pearls when they hear a few lyrics. So in that sense, I don't believe that hip hop lyrics should be censored. I mean, if you have in a lyric that says, you know, I'm going to go to your house on February 28th and I'm going to, you know, kill your dog, then okay. Like at that point, you just confessed a crime. Like if somebody's dog turns up dead March 1st, then we know who did it. But like, you know what I'm saying? Like when we're talking about stifling art, it is a very slippery slope to eventually, where will the line be drawn? So we have to definitely take that into account.
All right, let's get to your music, Lachi. I loved every song you played at Festability. For context, folks, on July 23rd, 2022, I had the pleasure of being Lachi's opening act for the main stage. I did a 20-minute speech and then introduced her, which was an honor. Did you enjoy yourself?
I had a lot of fun. It was like 1,007 degrees, Celsius. But it was a lot of fun. I really love doing these. Honestly, when I was doing that show, that was like the leg end of my Disability Pride tour. And the whole point of that tour was to put the word disability front and center in the name of the tour. And I had a really, really great time. Y'all did me well out in St. Louis.
I saw that this was actually part of a disability festival tour in July. How was that? Can you tell us about that?
It was great. We did a bunch of different shows. During that tour, we did Disability Inn. We did the National Independent Venue Association had a talk. So we did a few shows up in Ohio. We went down to Texas. We were back in New York for Disability Unite. We went down to you guys in Missouri. So we were kind of all over the place, but it was really, really nice to celebrate disability in every single show and to specifically talk about disability. So it's not like I don't always talk about, you know, disability specific. I mean, I'll always mention that I'm blind, but it was really nice to like talk about disability, have the folks in the audience get it like straight on. So I really enjoyed myself.
That's dope. Yeah, if you ever do it again and you're looking for an opener to go with you, I'm available.
Shameless plug life.
Despite the heat, it was dope. Are you mindful of the lyrics in your songs?
Yes, to some extent. Yes. A lot of my lyrics are very empowering. A lot of them come from my own personal experience. A lot of them are me really pumping up myself through hard times and to see them like affect other people is very beautiful thing. I mean, music is communication, right? And to help people put words to some of the feelings they have is a beautiful thing, especially folks who need to hear some of these lyrics, like go and be yourself and get out there and freaking do it. You can. Some people haven't heard that from anyone. And so it's nice to be that person to say it. But I think in my lyrics that I'm starting to bring out now, I'm being a lot more intentional about celebrating my culture, celebrating my Blackness, celebrating my womanness, celebrating my disability pride, my blindness, and really just saying things that speak to that. Because I keep preaching that we need to celebrate disability culture in a mainstream way. Well, may as well start with myself and my own lyrics.
And is that in Black Girl Cornrows? Tell us more about that song, how it came about and what it means to you.
So Black Girl Cornrows is just me, right? I'm Black Girl Cornrows. And really what that song is about all in all is a celebration of the self-description, which we talked about earlier. I'm a Black girl with cornrows, and I talk about my entire self, that the self-description doesn't just have to be about what you look like. It can be what you rep in, where you're from, this and that. It can include your she, her. It can include New York. Anyone who knows me and talks to me for more than and like 15 minutes knows that I'm from New York. I rep New York hard, and I rep New York in like a not polite, very like, if you're not from New York, then you ain't shit kind of way, which could get very annoying, especially if you're from Boston or LA. But the song is to rep your whole self. And one of the beautiful things about this song is I get to celebrate my Blackness, talking about my cornrows, which I'm really, really all about. But I also am a dance music artist. So this is a EDM song with, you know, rap lyrics set to EDM. So people are bumping and moving, don't even realize they're learning something. I think that one of the best things about this project, though, was I got to work with some of the most amazing people to put it together. So my co-artists, which is Evie Oddly, who actually is a RuPaul's Drag Race winner from season 10, also has a disability. Working with her was just really fire. Her verse is like ridiculous. I also got to work with Question ATL, who is this amazing cypher artist out of Atlanta. So he basically freestyled his verse and it just came out very fire. He is a blind artist. And then we had it produced by Black Caviar, who are this DJ duo who are charting. They had a song placed on Spider-Man. I mean, these guys are legit. And then we had our mastering and mixing done by Emily Lazar, who is a Grammy Award winning mixing and mastering girl power winner. And then also our artwork was done by Mafreshu, who is an Iranian sketch artist. And so we went in on the culture. We was like, everybody is going to be represented here. And so I think it just came together very, very beautifully. And I'm just really excited about that track.
Love that. That is dope. Yeah. What does it mean to you to be able to speak at the White House? That just sounds like a dream come true.
Yeah. I mean, look, that is so funny too, because I called my mom and I was like, hey, mom, I'm at the White House. And she was like, is it? We did it. Yay. We're done. But it's an honor. And, you know, it's surreal. You know, when you get in there, it's a real feeling. You're like, holy crap, like, this is the White House. You know, I'm here with Joe Biden. I'm shaking Joe Biden's hand. And, you know, Joe Biden complimented my outfit because I was out there in a red, white, and blue outfit, red, white, and blue cane, red, white, and blue makeup. You know, your girl went the whole nine yards. and I was like, I am going to be the best dressed at the White House. I don't care. And so it is surreal. And again, like, you know, I like to showcase like this, like an air of confidence, right? And just because I want other people with disabilities to know it's fine. You can be confident. It's fun. And you can be confident and still be, you know, a good person. But, you know, when I was at the White House, I know when I first walked in, just humility. I was just like, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe just being myself and just like accepting who I am and stuff got me here. And they called me there to talk about me. Like, it's just such a beautiful like thing. And all I can say is humility and just gratitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What topics do you generally speak about with a president or, you know, elected officials when you are blessed with that kind of opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's from presidents to CEOs to, you know, anywhere in between. We just talk about the culture. I mean, I'm just here to represent. I think a lot of it too is like the questions that I'm asked when I, the best way to put it is when I talk to a group of disabled advocates, we're talking about real stuff. I mean, we're getting in the nitty gritty, but I can sit here and talk to like, you know, a group of execs from Amazon, a group from execs from Google, a group of, you know, directors at the White House. And they'll be asking stuff like, so what do you mean by blindness as a spectrum? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And the thing is, we're in here in this disability community, in the disability justice community and disability rights community. And we're like, why don't people get it? Everything's moving so slow and it's echo chamber. But meanwhile, them on the outside, they have no idea how far in the conversation that we are in our movements. They're just trying to figure out, like, is it okay to say disability? Am I not allowed? Should I not say differently abled? Like, they're still having the conversation of disabled versus differently abled. Meanwhile, we're like on cloud nine trying to get to cloud 10, is what I've continued to find. And I've had to learn that like they're not on that lane. And we're bringing that lane to them. And it does need to be kind of spoon-fed, so you're not giving people shoving too much in their mouth. All at the same time. And so while we talk about like it's a lot to constantly be the first, there is a beauty and like a blessing of getting to be the first one, because, you know, there's a lot of times when people get into contact with the first disabled person they ever meet, and it's not the experience that we in the disability justice movement would want them to have. It's like, No, it shouldn't have been me. I should have told you, because I would have said it like this and you would have totally been cool with it. Or at least learned and not been afraid. So that is the beauty of a lot of the work I get to do. So I do love it.
That is great. Is it frustrating for you to be in situations like that when you're so deep in these conversations with other disabled folks about what we need to be considered to be a legitimate part of society, and you get into a place that's as high up as the White House and they are so far behind in that conversation?
You know, I think that so the things that do frustrate me is not that, you know, at the end of the day, you have to give ignorance grace, right? They just weren't told right, or they weren't told. And I think that the things that do frustrate me are when someone doesn't want to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We give them, we spoon feed it, and they don't want to learn. Or there's a willful ignorance of, we told you three times and you're still asking us the same question, trying to act like we didn't tell you. Those are the kinds of things I get frustrated with. But I always want to give people grace to learn and grow and try to do even just a little bit better. And then also, the other thing that frustrates me are, you know, disabled leaders who may be giving the wrong message, mm-hmm. a message that's not in line with true disability justice. I mean, disability justice as it is defined. Anybody can go to Sins Invalid and figure out what disability mm-hmm. justice mm-hmm. means. They have it in a little square. It's very easy to find out what disability justice is all about. And when folks kind of either tout that around wrongly, or when they tokenize themselves
mm-hmm.
and allow just kind of the broader community to take them in as a token instead of as a beacon, that's when things start, you know, going the wrong way, in wrong direction.
Mm-hmm. All right. So thank you for that. Can you tell us anything about your upcoming book project?
Ah, yes. Well, so I am currently aligned with best-selling New York Times author, Tim Vendehay, and we are putting together just a book talking and celebrating disability culture, womanness culture, Blackness culture, really honestly talking about the come up of a Black disabled person in America, but from the perspective of culture, from the perspective of music, entertainment, and media. This is not a memoir. This is definitely more of a cultural piece. And we are focused on speaking, you know, from the lens that I bring, but also there is every intention to incorporate as many other disability culture leaders as possible, speaking from their lens through their other identities that they identify. And so we want to really take this down this journey. And, you know, there's a lot of support from some of the folks that I know in the non-disabled community and the pop culture community that are excited about this book. I can't say the name of the book yet because we're still in the phase of trying to land our deal. What I will say is that it is a discussion from a Black woman about disability that we need to see more of. Just recently, Black Disability Politics had come out, which is an amazing, amazing, amazing book that I recommend everybody check out. There's also the Haben Girma book about the deafblind lawyer out of Harvard. Mm-hmm. And so there are more books coming out about Black disabled women speaking about the American experience. And so I am coming out and speaking at it from a culture lens, from a media and entertainment lens. And so I'm really excited to put that out into the world from that perspective.
So excited to read it.
Yes, yes. You're going to have to, we'll get you an advanced review copy. I'm dead ass, actually.
Word. Let me know when you're ready to promote it. And I would love to promote together. I'm writing an ABC book about disabilities as well. So we can link up.
Oh yeah, for sure. Definitely. Heck yeah. Please.
Yeah. All right. Lachi, like Versace, thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation with me. I really hope you've enjoyed this as much as I did. I appreciate all the insights that you provided. Please come back whenever you want. If people want to connect with you and support the work you do, where can they do so?
So like I said at my talk at Google the other day, Google me. it was like a little weird. But Google me. I mean, Lachi, L-A-C-H-I. You can find me at Lachi Music, L-A-C-H-I-M-U-S-I-C, on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, anywhere you want to be. I'm there. I'm in your backyard right now with binoculars trying to see what you're doing. And I'm really active on socials and I interact. So definitely hit me up. I'll talk back. But you can also find my music, like I said, on Spotify, iTunes. Do people still use that? I don't know.
YouTube. Apple Music.
Apple Music, Tidal. Check out Black Girl Cornrows, out December 2nd. Thank you.
Word up. I will make sure to share everything in my description below for sure. People, once again, I'm Sean Gold. Thank you so much for watching. Make sure you like, comment all your thoughts, and subscribe. And I will see you all next time on another episode of Crippled by Culture. Thank you so much, Lachi, for being here.